surrounding a married woman and a potential relationship with another man. Whoa. So we don't force them to get divorced. But they get divorced anyway. They get divorced. The woman gets divorced. And now, guess what? She doesn't want to marry this fella. Guess what? She's not supposed to. Because since there's such powerful rumors based on circumstantial evidence that indicates that she was unfaithful with this man, divorced. But they get divorced anyway. They get divorced. The woman gets divorced. And now, guess what? She doesn't want to marry this fella. Guess what? She's not supposed to. Because since there's such powerful rumors based on circumstantial evidence that indicates that she was unfaithful with this man, there is a din in the Torah that just as a woman is unfaithful may not remain with her husband, so too she may not marry subsequently the adulterer. That's what we know for a fact. We know it based upon circumstantial evidence and rumor. So there's a distinction. We don't make a leave her husband because after all we have what we call a chazaka, there's a presumption or a status quo that she's married to us, so we wouldn't want to make a leave. But to go and marry the fellow about whom all these rumors swirl, it's almost confirmation. And there's no what we call chazaka, there's no, you never had a marital relationship with this fellow, officially, you never married him. So we say she's not permitted to marry him. You often find this, and unfortunately it's not always kept. I'm sorry to talk about it, but it happens. I can tell you a case where there's a piece of paper, which I have in my drawer. The piece of paper says that, see, today, when a get is written, the get is never given to anyone. Not given to the wife, but the get is held by the bed, by the rabbon. Now it's been held, but they even slice it. They cut it. You ever take hearts of prayer? Take one slice, we'll just make four if you open it up. That's what happens to all the gifts. They take it, they fold it before, they got this little slit. And now it's cut in section four sides. Thank you very much. Four slits. And the get is held in the file of the best. How then are the parties permitted to marry? What proof do they have that they were divorced? In time of the Gemara, the get was held by the woman as proof that she was the woman. But now it tells the Bez to follow, what proof does she have? So Bez has a separate document known as a Ptur. P-T-U-R. Not as a P, apostrophe P-U-R. Ptur. Ptur means she is Ptur, which means she's had a Boksha Ptarani. She's rid of him. And now she's permitted to marry when she pleases. That's the normal thing. Well, what happens if in the middle of the Bez proceedings, the woman who was getting a Jewish get, there are all kinds of stories about her. And it comes to the attention of the Bezdin that perhaps this woman has not been conducting herself appropriately. Maybe she was adulterous. So they will write in the Ptur. Now the get, I'm saying, the get is the right man when she pleases. That's the text. You never play the text of the get. But in the Ptur, which is a much more, how should I say, the Ptur is a, you call a Maisa Bezdin. Not the instrument of divorce, simply the proof. So therefore, it should be much more, I don't know how to say it, informal. And the right thing to do, which we never dream of writing to get itself, we're afraid to tamper with the get. We're not afraid to tamper with the tour, but then the last name. Never write last name to the get. We're afraid, it's a new thing, they never had it. But in the tour, you write always the last name, they will write it, the address, you know, all kinds of things. They will say in the tour, I have it in my drawer, the tour says, this woman is permitted to marry when she pleases, except for X. Because we're afraid that, based on circumstantial evidence, and actually pretty powerful evidence, that she was adulterous with X, and therefore she may not marry X after she's divorced from her husband. Well, unfortunately, in the case in which I'm describing, with this piece of paper in my drawer, guess who she married? Three guesses are the first who don't count. X. How a rabbi married her to X when he had not seen proof of a divorce, and the proof of the divorce says in the right bold letters, except X. Either she duped the rabbi, she whited out some Xeroxes, or I don't know what shit she pulled. Or the rabbi didn't know, didn't care, didn't look. But it happened. Well, she got married with that rabbi. I don't know what she did. I just don't know. I have no idea. So this is the story. It's called Eidei Kiyur. Eidei Kiyur means the word mechuar, it's ugly. And you know, the unfortunate thing is these cases, you know, all the movies about these things, you know, the newspaper reports about these things, you know, the private detectives, I can tell you stories about private detectives. You don't want to hear about my stories about private detectives. But they can rip a community apart. It's what people do individually. That's, you say, it's a halvitzer. It's a half a problem. It's a big problem. Or it's a half a problem. When the community gets ripped into pieces, that's when it's a real disaster. I remember getting a call from a rabbi in a suburban community. There was a situation in which there was a story about a certain woman with a certain man, and they had a private detective, and the private detective had film of this couple going into a motel, coming out from the motel. I'm not kidding around. This is the, like a little, like a, you know. And now what happens? So it's a big deal, all right? So they should be getting divorced. If she is, whatever. What's the big deal? The big deal is as follows. This man, who's now suspected of wrongdoing based on videotape, that's based upon rumor, wants to come and daven in shul. So now he wants to purchase a seat for the high holiday. And the family of the, I'm not bad at this thing. Someone's family here, the woman whose husband is being unfaithful, they say, no way, we're not going to let him into the synagogue of Yom Kippur. And guess who's in the middle? The rabbi. Who'd he call up? Me. What should he do? Oy. There's no win over here. No matter which way you cut it, you can't win these things. You can't win. It's a no-win situation. Impossible to win this one. And then you start yelling and screaming, we're going to boycott, we're going to bring the shul down, we'll publicize this video, we'll fire the rabbi, we'll walk out of protest, we'll barricade the door, Disaster. Then another rabbi friend of mine was a case of a man and a woman who were adulterers and both were members of the shul. I mean, there were two couples in the shul and there was in the shul itself. Oh boy. This rabbi told me that he used to see this guy come to shul and like put on his tefillin and make room. He wanted to take him limb from limb and just throw him out. If I'm mitzvah for his kid, is the kid's fault that his father is a no-goodnik? So you gotta bite your tongue and, make nothing happen. This is a real tragedy. This is a tragedy. I'm going on 22 years in the shul. I've had a man who had his private eye tracking down his wife. I think I had that more than once. I had a case where a man, presumably, again, according to apparently reliable testimony, ran off with a non-Jewish woman. These are all terrible, terrible stories, but at least I never had the terrible stories that these other rabbis had, they're worse. Worse. You have there's only to say what's worse than that. These are terrible stories, and you have to look at the Shulchan Aruch and see what to do. It's a very big tragedy. And the only way to avoid the tragedy is that everyone should be a good person. That's it. Once a person's a bad person, so it's a disaster. The Dinah Shel Hadarah, which is very interesting. Let's say a man is rumored to have lived with a non-Jewish woman. And lo and behold, he converts. And lo and behold, he wants to marry her. Lo and behold, he's not allowed to do that. The Dinah Shel Hadarah. The Mishnah. You may ask, you know of cases which have been done. You know it happened. So how can it say in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to do it? Well, apparently, this case came to the Rambam. Case of this nature, the Rambam. So the Rambam wrote a very famous response in this regard. The Rambam wrote himself, yes, he's not permitted to marry. Then the Mishnah came out with a Mishnah, Gemara. continues to live with this woman as a non-Jewish woman. And the only way to prevent them from living in sin for the rest of his life, in outrageous sin, an intermarriage or interrelationship, the only way out is to have her convert and have him live with the convert, who he's not supposed to marry. Not supposed, not allowed.
Just to live.
No, ultimately he'll marry her. So the official converts. Said there, I'm an amazing line. We, some of us are forced to choose the lesser of the two evils. And although, ideally, in such a case, we're supposed to put our foot down and say, she's not allowed to convert, we're not allowed to marry her if she does convert, and just go your separate way, that will be the strict halacha. Because that unenforceable, this is not 1994, it's a Rambam, who lived a long time ago. It's unenforceable, it's better to allow the lesser of two evils that she will convert, then you will marry her, even though it's against the Mishnah, it's prohibitive, it's still the lesser of two evils. And for this reason, many people are involved in such cases. How many cases are like this? Oh, come on. Boy meets girl, college campus, she's not Jewish, but she's blonde and blue eyes, and she somehow falls for her. We know they're living together. And all of a sudden he wants to marry her. My Yitzhaku, his mother, his bubby, how can you marry a shiksa? So what do? You want to have a conversion, and you can't do it. It's done anyway. On the ground, that in these cases, I guess the rabbi makes a decision, that if you're not going to convert her and have her marry her, you're going to stay with her in a non-Jewish state. Tough. Tough, cool. Not pretty. Not pretty. I've been involved in this case. And as a rabbi, I was involved in this case, and I followed the Rambam.
My friend is the Gayer.
She's the girls. She's more from than her husband. They usually have a
tragic. Yeah.
I want to tell you though, when we speak about conversion, it has to be an honest to goodness conversion. In the sense that although we don't allow conversion for the sake of marriage, ideally, you were doing only, you know, because the reality is involved, there has to be a full acceptance of this. There's a rabbi in a shul not far away, suburban town, village. What's the case? A whole family, a woman and a few children, and he was convinced that the woman was not Jewish. She or her mother had undergone some kind of bogus conversion, but he would not allow her to reconvert on the grounds that she was still driving the shul on Shabbos. I was very glad to drive the shul on Shabbos. No problem, she could drive her husband, the Shabbos guy, I don't know, but once she converts, so and they lived a mile away from the shul, more than a mile. So he finally convinced her, this is a non-Jewish woman, his mother wasn't, he convinced her, because it's a children called S.A.R., I'm pretty sure, because it's S.A.R., and they're not Jewish, but mind you. He convinced her that he should walk the shul on Shabbos. She walked the shul on Shabbos. So that next week, he went and made a conversion. The conversion was of this woman and her three children, and then he was supposed to arrange a marriage, I hope he did, between her and her husband, because it's all not the one really fully married. I to get the Mishnah, he's not allowed to marry her. The answer is, you'll turn it over, he's living with her in a non-Jewish state. So, yes, I wasn't even involved in such a conversion. I wasn't involved in marriage. I was involved in conversion. But there are other cases involved where there was a man living with a non-Jewish woman, and there was not going to be a break it up, and then there was a sincere, shmiras shabbos on the part of the woman. So we do everything in one shot, all purpose. You have a conversion, woman converts. As soon as she converts, it's followed immediately by a wedding, because now that they're married, now that she's Jewish, rather, so now she's going to be in violation if she has to marry. It's a big problem, we'll discuss in a minute, which is what we call havkana. Havkana means a waiting period of 3 months. If a woman is divorced from X, she wants to marry Y, she must wait 92 days. The reason should be fairly obvious. Paternity. Who was the father of the child? We can't afford to take a chance. She'll marry a month later. She'll have a child 7 months later. I have no idea if it's a 7 month baby or a 9 month baby for the first guy, which is ridiculous. You have to wait 92 days, 3 months plus. Question over here, do you require 92 days? It's going to be very tough. You can just imagine. she converts to Judaism, and now they take a 92-day abstinence. You know, that's not going to be very easy to ordinarily, we'll just skip ahead a little bit.
She's marrying the same man that she's
married. But we have to know that his child, is his child Jewish or not? He's going to be Jewish anyway. Is the child conceived in Jewishness or not? Because if the child's already been conceived before she goes to the mikveh, the full haros v'shalov v'tusha v'ladosa v'tusha. She's conceived not in holiness and born into holiness. There's certain halachas, where many differences in halachas, where if she conceived afterwards, it's full-fledged Jew. So the general rule, I'll give you the kitzur quickly, and it goes as follows. When it comes to a woman who's either divorced or widow, she may not marry for 92 days, come what may. Even if we are sure beyond any shadow of a doubt that she's not pregnant. How are we so sure? Well, her first husband was in China for the year before he died. She was in jail the year before he died. She's 90 years old.
Why did they wait so long?
Whatever it may be. Giving far-fetched examples. Even in these cases, she has to wait 3 months. No exceptions. Even if she was civilly divorced. That's a big problem. That a civilly divorced couple. And then they decide, divorce for years. Then she wants to become married again, Jewishly. So suddenly she wakes up, oh, I don't have a get. Quick, give her a get. Yeah, but my wedding date is set for a month from now. Now what? Not permitted to marry in 92 days. Stars all pilkle, maybe civil divorce is different, the remuneration of the children this way and that way and the other way. Very complicated. Anyway, this is for either a divorcee or a widow. But for a convert, most authorities maintain, and we rely on them, even though it's a matter of controversy, that there is no what we call lo plug rabbonim. Lo plug means that the rabbi makes no distinction. No matter what happens, you have to wait 92 days. They never said it when it comes to a woman other than a widow or a divorcee. But for a comment, they didn't say it. So that if we can be sure that she's either pregnant or not pregnant, she's pregnant, what's the point of waiting 92 days? We know exactly what the story is. We know that the child is conceived not in the holiness. Or if we know for a fact that she's not pregnant, I know that for a fact you say, I'll tell you the story in a minute. But then we also wait 92 days. Here's my story. I had a strict couple, and I asked, but I can't do anything because if she may be pregnant, I don't know if she's pregnant, she's not pregnant. So the man says, we would practice birth control. Because we don't want her to have any children before she converts. I said, you will forgive me. But birth control has been known to be ineffective. I can't rely on birth control. What should I do, Rabbi? He said, I'm not going to do the conversion until you have a pregnancy test. Pregnancy test? Comes up negative. Right? Even though 1 in 10,000 false negatives, they have such, they are such things. But, I'm sorry?
No, I was thinking that if she got the test too early, but maybe then...
Well, then another thing he said, she had a period. She had a period, so obviously she's not pregnant. So, sorry, that's been known to happen too. I'm not taking any of this. I want a pregnancy test. So I did a pregnancy test, sure enough it was negative, and we did the conversion, and they got married, and they had a child. The child's Jewish. See, even though he's not supposed to marry her. Right, the din, the Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam, I thought the Rambam was looking over my shoulder when I was involved in this whole case. Because I, if not the Rambam, wouldn't, if not this Rambam, I would never have done it. How could I do it? She runs away from him. Why? She can.
They don't do it.
Why can't she marry? Why can't you marry? Wonderful, that's happily ever after. I wasn't married because she's not broke. That's why she shouldn't marry. But other than that, she can get it to become broke. Prohibit one to the other. That's absolutely true. Not prohibit anything. Not at all. Not at all. On the contrary, you really should marry. You know, use the quote unquote without benefit of marriage, it's not nice. They call castaway.
Saying when it's a non-Jew.
Non-Jew is the problem.
Is the problem.
We're talking about a non-Jewish woman.
A non-Jewish woman.
Non-Jewish
is
man is a problem. Let's look at a non-Jewish woman for a second. Okay. same thing applies to showing up in the next case. A non-Jewish man is with a Jewish woman, and then he converts. Same business. He shouldn't marry her. Same story. There are cases, I'm sorry to say, where that happens too. I just call it interesting case. Interesting case. Huh. A man was, this is a Connecticut case. A man, I remember the case, I can tell you exactly the day when this happened. I have a symptom to know exactly what day this happened. Unbelievable, this happened. Well, it happened 11 and a half years ago. I remember. A woman was living with a non-Jewish man. Same business. And he wanted to convert. Problem in this case, because he never was properly circumcised. He had a circumcision, but it was done by a physician, not by a moyo. It was all business. Had to take a little drop of blood. It's unbelievable. The tiny nothing was done in the mikvah, in the waiting room of the mikvah. And as soon as that was done, he went to the mikvah to convert this man. As soon as that was done, we took him next door to the Hebrew Institute. And we gathered together a minion, and we called these guys to make a minion. And the rabbi from Connecticut married them all. Boom.
What was the rush?
No, it's a big rush. Because once he converts, now I live with another guy without benefit of marriage.
No, he wouldn't live with her until...
Well, he was in a rush. He wanted to do a mitzvah. Now he's married. A mitzvah lived with your wife. So he wanted a rush. So he did it all in one shot. Another bunch of rabbis. One chat like this, boom. You know what comes up all the time? Russians. That's all the time. We got our case here with Russians. Unbelievable case. Oh, this is one of my most incredible cases. It was a case of a man whose name, like his name was, it was one of the Kohanim names. His name was Kagan or Kogan, I think his name was. It was a very common Russian name. The H's become G's, you know about that in Russian. The H's become G's. That's the way the alphabet, that's just the way it is. You see many, you look around and see after many times, G's become A, H's become G. That's just the way it is. The Kohan is often Kagan or Kogan. So, this was referred to me by the Washington Magic Committee. I believe it's Board of Learning at NYU, JSS, in place, Baal Tshuva, or limited background for the department. And he wanted to marry a certain woman, but she was probably not Jewish. P.S., I found out, but she was pregnant. Lo and behold, immaculate conception, is a month. But then it was gone to get a little bit of a rush. She wanted to convert before she showed. So, it was a big problem. His name is Kohen. And a Kohen is not permitted to marry a convert. We discussed that a few weeks ago. Now, what do you do? I think I mentioned the time that we had somebody try to de-Kohenize somebody. Guess what we found out? I'm not going to believe it. This Mr. Kohen, the young fellow, had a father. His father's name was also Kohen. The grandfather's name was also Kogan. But the grandmother, Mrs. Kogan, was not Jewish. Therefore, Mr. Kogan Sr., the father of this young man, was not Jewish. But the mother was Jewish. So this young fellow Kogan, who was about to convert his girlfriend, he was Jewish, but he was not a Kohen. He lucked it. He was able to marry the convert. Unbelievable. We did a conversion. Amazing. Did a conversion right here in the mikvah. She brought him over to She brought him over to the shul. He has some friends somehow or other. I don't know how. Some people here. Watch them. I knew somebody here. And there was an actual wedding ceremony. See, my son, he'll play the Casio. And
it was a simple.
It was places. About to see the witch. There was something. I already forgot the details. It was not, we met a wedding right upstairs in the school. And, yeah. I don't know what the story is. This, I can't tell any more stories, but I don't know the stories. This one, if I didn't tell you this, I can't resist this one. I told you the story about the Pedro checking up from Czechoslovakia, from Hungary to Czechoslovakia, and all. This takes the cake. This story, but no more, okay? It's the after the last time the story. This one takes the cake. This is to this one. A certain rabbi who lives in the Lower East Side, connected with YU, tells me that he has a wacky case to someone who's living in a place called Tribeca. You know what that is?
Yeah.
That's, you know, there's some loft there, Soho, I don't know what that means. Just like one of those looks like an artist colony or something. He's a photographer. She's a writer. I don't know what that is. She's pregnant. He's Jewish, and she is not. And she wants very much to convert before the baby is born. Rabbi from the Pacific Center, sitting on someone else's official and everything. The rabbi from there started, we used to walk to the Lower East Side, kind of walk the distance, but he got to change now with them. Fine, don't come to see me. They came to my, sat in my living room. She's already very pregnant. And they're sitting with me. And I see that she's sincere. He's not so. He's in the pocket, but he's very photographed. So I'm just, that's so. How are you going to, marry this fellow and be observant? How's it going to work? No, she's observant. And the rabbi vouched for the other rabbi vouched for him. And he agreed that the child was brought up in a yeshiva, and he lived before, I don't know if it happened, but okay. The rabbi said, two rabbis vouched for them. Fine. I said to the man, are you Jewish? Are you Jewish? You want to convert her? So she can live and marry him. Yeah, maybe he's not Jewish. He's, no, of course I'm Jewish. My mother speaks Yiddish, or my grandmother speaks Yiddish. And I thought he asked a question. I don't deal with something like this. I said, are there any standard questions asked when you're going to a wedding? You don't know if you're not familiar. Are there any divorces, conversions, or adoptions in your family? All these three are red flags. Why? Adoption to being non-Jewish. They passed the baby off as Jewish. Conversions could be beloved, reform, concern, could be anything. And worst of all is divorces. Because divorces could mean a mamza. He says right away, no. He looks at him and says, Nikki, true.
You forgot something.
I take a deep breath. What is it? There was a second marriage somewhere. I said, who? My worst fear to confirm. His mother's mother had him from her second marriage.
His mother had him
from a second marriage. At least the question, his mother might be a mamza. Okay, which case he's a mamza. We had to go and figure out the grandmother who gave birth to the mother in the 1920s and married first in the 19-teens, or after World War I, was divorced soon thereafter. Was there originally a marriage? Was there a divorce? Was there what? And it was the city of Budapest. Now, since the Iron Curtain had fallen already, so there was records. Budapest, they kept meticulous records on the Jewish Kehila. So I try to fax the Budapest, so I got a letter, the name of somebody to somebody, and fax the rabbi a letter. It's the rabbi Zinga, I think his name was, give me the record. We got a record for a divorce of these people, a marriage of these people. Rent you back, divorce, we have no records. We only got the record of marriage. Brilliant. Marriage, you also have no records. Neither of a first marriage, not of a second marriage. My biggest and greatest fear was as follows. The first marriage, don't forget, his grandmother wasn't from us. This is the generation that was becoming not from us. It was World War I time. Well, the great grandparents were from some little shtetl somewhere in the countryside of Hungary. They were from. So their daughter wants to marry. Where would she marry? Back at her hometown, their little farm. Who would do the wedding if it's the case? No doubt about it. The rabbi who is observant. So therefore, stands to reason that the first marriage of this grandmother was probably a religious marriage. 1923 or so, when she divorced this guy, she was already in Budapest. Budapest was a notoriously non-observant city. Very likely just walked away from each other civilly or just like this. So when she quote-unquote married the second guy, when she was no longer from, she thinks she went back to get the marriage in her old countryside. So rather would check out make sure it was a get. I'm looking right at her, I'm looking at a mountain situation over here. Didn't know what to do.
Mentioned a couple
of
weeks ago that
if
a man marry a
non-Jewish person,
they're not
convert, she shouldn't convert at all. So that's what my suggestion was. Maybe we should make him into a shifra. I'm not kidding. One of the people suggested that. This is the perfect case. Make him into a shifra.
So we think that.
She should convert to become a maid servant, a shifra. I guess I would own her. And the husband, somewhere else, I would own the husband owner. And I could put her in jail for that, the 13th Amendment. and then after she had finished, when she gets past childbearing age, she can convert completely. Meanwhile, the children will be fine. P.S. This child who was in her uterus was no problem, and certainly no problem, because I was concealing she was not Jewish. He'd be a non-Jewish child, or maybe a Jewish child, but not a certain amount, that wouldn't be a problem. The next kid I'm worried about. Didn't know what to do. I said, I can't, this is too big for me. Go to the top. So this East Side rabbi had an uncle who was on the best in television. He called my office yeshiva. Called him up. Uncle Chaim, I have a problem here. He puts me on the phone. He said, why should we assume that she's a mamza and that he's a mamza? Why? Just to assume, just like this, that the first marriage was a marriage, and the second, then the first divorce was not a good get. How do you know? Maybe there was never a condition in the first place, 1919. Maybe it was a get in 1923. Why do you want to be a pessimist? Why isn't the worst case scenario? I said, are you willing to write me a tshuva about this? Are you willing to make an official psak of bed in Tel Aviv? No. I called Yerushalayim. They went to Rabbi Yoshua. Tap. So Yoshua says, I don't understand how you let what's going on here. The man is living with a non-Jewish woman. You have an obligation and responsibility to convert her. It's Rabba. So I asked, but what will happen with the children? That's not your problem. I'm not going to give any psak on the children not there or not. Just let them marry. So Yoshua's general was pointed, you can fix them with today. What about tomorrow, some other day? I couldn't do it. How did I go through with this conversion and have a kid next year? A kid come back to me in 20 years with a timer. What'd you do? You allowed my mother to convert, knowing that my father was a mamza. I did not convert. I would have been a goy. I could have converted myself and been a kosher Jew. Not because of you, Rabbi. I'm stigmatized. I can't marry anybody. I refused to do it. So, he called back on Bokhaim and said, do me a favor. Are you willing to put it in writing? Not an official talk, in a letter. Said, yes. Okay. Then he's willing to put it in writing. A letter on his stationery. It was an aerogram. So it came, let it be an aerogram. He didn't want to make it official, it's not a bedroom. It's a personal shock. But look, he's known as our bedroom in Tel Aviv. So good enough for this kid who'll be born in the next year, who 20 years from now will take this letter, and then I'll just do the trick. I said, okay, come today. Today I'll meet you in the mikvah. Nah, she's not due for another week. So that I am. I'll do for another week. But come today. Nah, it's going to be inconvenient. Tomorrow, next day. The next day, the baby was born. Someone's going to write this. The baby was born. The baby was born to a goyish mother. Now, get the five tickets. Not only must she convert, but baby has to convert too. So, waited a month or so, the baby got a little bigger, Now we have now a double conversion. Here we go again, back to the mikvah. Double conversion. The mother and the father took the baby in. The father, you know, the baby trunks. They took the baby into this trailer and probably half the wife. See the rabbi here forever ago. And the way to do it is you take the father with the baby and hold the baby under the shoulders, drop the baby under the water and hold it. And the baby sort of gives a little squawk, and you know, they're not scared of water. We're scared. We're petrified. A little baby under the water. No problem. I would never done it myself, but if you did it, you should show me how to do it. It works. Good. We convert the mother, we convert the baby. Now, I have to make a wedding. So, I had with me for the conversion these two rabbis that were on the bed, the one from the East Southern Pacific Center. In other words, now we needed to have a wedding. So I asked seven more boys from the yeshiva to come to do the wedding. We did the wedding in Hebrew Institute again, because, you know, that's regularly next door. So I remember, you know, I don't know, Shimony Kamenetsky, he was one of the people, the guy had six other boys came. We made a wedding. I took a bottle of grapes in the house. And we had a wedding right on the spot. On the spot. Then they were finished. And I said, hey, we should really have Sherebrons. We didn't have Sherebrons. No, that was 11 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock, where we go? So, went to the pizza shop. Joey and Eddie, main event, they made Sherebrons. Everyone bought pizza, I bought tuna fish, sandwich, and we had 10 people exactly. And we managed. Joey had a broker, Eddie had a broker, let's just show Sherebrons. It was unbelievable. We called a guy across the street, the shipment, and he already came out with the menu. Because I got the Sherebrons. That story has to be a real winner story. But no more stories. We'll tell you. But you know what the thing about these stories are? You remember the halachas based on the stories. You remember halachas. The stories that you didn't remember. See, each one of these stories, you tell 10 different things. About the halacha this, the halacha this. All right. Now. The laws of Havchana, we mentioned about weighing 92 days, the time of the very next Simon Yud Gimel. You have to wait 92 days.
Did the baby just get converted so young after converted again at 12? Are we going to
make
again at 12
No. A young boy or girl is converted in childhood. When they turn 12 and 13, respectively, for girls and boys, they have to be, so we assume, they have to be told that you were converted, and now you want to accept upon yourself to become Jewish. They say yes, yes. They say no, they have a right to go back to their original religion. The big issue was a generation ago. Now, everything's up front. Now, the psychologists all say, there's an adoption, you should tell the child at a young age that he or she's adopted. But it was not that way in the 50s. At all, absolutely. They try to keep them for their entire life. I should never know. If you go to their grave, never know they were adopted. I don't know if the older people, they can remember that. But now, not a modern concept, but that was. He had the big shadow that kept her up in salivation. I have a young baby that I converted, I adopted and I converted in infancy. Now I'm turning 12 or 13. I don't want to tell this person that he or she is converted, is adopted and converted. So what's going to happen if we have to re-accept at age 12 or 13? What do you do? Here's a big issue. Are you required to tell the person at 12 or 13? Well, no. What it means is in the negative. If the person wishes after 12 or 13 to renege, to go back to the state of non-Jewishness, then he or she is permitted to do so. All right. I don't have to tell him. So they don't tell them to go to their graves, never knowing whether they're Jewish or not Jewish. That's a big dispute. Some say if they never were told, they never re-accepted the Jews, they end up being non-Jews their whole lives. Others say, no, well, they don't, in a positive sense, renege on their Jews, and they really are Jewish. Who am I to decide who's right in this kind of question? I wouldn't want to take that on my own shoulders. So I'm very grateful for the Rabboni Shalom, but nowadays, it's the psychologists change their minds. Then they tell them right away that they're not Jewish, and have to reconvert. Not reconvert, have to recommit themselves to the midst of the problem.
But they're not Jewish, and they have to accept again will remarry.
They are Jewish. But they are Jewish, but they
have to take it upon themselves now.
Again, at age 12 or 13. Knock on the real whopper case. The rabbis, no stories. Says in the Shulchan Aruch that a man is not permitted to marry a woman who is either pregnant from another man. It can happen, and she's pregnant, her husband died. Now she wants to marry someone else. She's still pregnant from her first husband. Legit. No scandal.
He's not allowed to marry.
You're not permitted to marry a woman who's pregnant from some other man. What is that? That's a hell of a story. Most women, especially the rarity. The woman, I mean, never happened, an accident, that is a cancer, it will not happen, it didn't happen. The man died, never was leading a pregnant life. Most cases, I didn't remarry before she had a baby. It was just forget the halacha. Not to say for that. But the next one is a real unbelievable case. Lo mei nekes chaveiro. A man may not marry a woman who is nursing a child from another man. Not only is she actually nursing him, the child him or her, but even if she is what we call a potential nursing mother, which means up to 2 years after the baby is born. Here you can have a case. A woman has a child. The child is 1 year too old. The husband dies. She can't be around. All right? She doesn't want to be alone the rest of her life, so she has to, you know, she waits a year. You know, out of respect for her first husband, I think it's a very appropriate thing. Okay? She's now past the first yard sign. She's a young woman. She can't wait around. So if people start making, she's looking for her. She meets a fine fellow, and they want to get married. But wait a minute. The baby's only a year and a half old. Nothing doing. She may not marry him until the child's second birthday.
For what reason?
The reason is as follows. We're afraid she'll become pregnant from the second husband. And when she becomes pregnant, the milk will dry up. And we're afraid that the child's going to die.
Second
child? Lack of milk.
The first child
will die for lack of milk. So we may ask, how can she live with her regular husband? Well, that Rachman is the child. His child. But a strange man, you know, the old stepchild syndrome. Sounds nuts to us. Sounds crazy. But the rabbis are smarter than all of us put together. They know about
human nature,
they know about stepchildren. What are the various, how many stories are there in American, Cinderella, is it?
But they say Cinderella. She's got a bad rap.
Whatever it is, they have these cases exist in real life. Yes. They do.
So are these women allowed to start dating?
Yes. Okay. I have a kind of a case where a woman, exactly this happened, lost her husband. Terrible story. A little baby. She met a fine young man. They wanted to remarry, to get married. We waited till the actual birthday, second birthday of this little baby. And the next night she remarried. Mm. I went to the wedding. I had a time, I went to the wedding. Thank God they happily married their children. They're all grown from Shem. She rebuilt her life. It's supposed to happen. But, you know, life goes on. We don't live in the past. Judaism does not believe in living in the past. People who live in the past are wrapped up in past memories and past disasters. They can never climb out of it. It's a terrible thing. We believe strongly you have to climb out of your past and move on. There's so many people I know who are wrapped up in horrors of the past. One guy is telling me his story, complaining about a story, had a fight with his wife 20 years ago. I'm not kidding. And she did this, and she did this. Who were better spies 20 years ago? Quite sure. The store wrapped up. I need to be this out, but 15 years ago, I need to get an aliyah. The God didn't give me a... People are nuts!
Yeah.
Right. They rebuild! I'll talk to this chaverich, I'm not putting myself in their place. But the Hashem says build. Of course! All those it's wrapped up in care, holding the memory. It's terrible. It was a complete disaster. Complete disaster. Terrible. It's a terrible thing. Absolutely, it's a misogyny now. Absolutely. Your spouse, you lose a spouse, it's a misogyny now. I remember that story. I know Avraham Avinu lost Sarah and he remarried. you know, still have this, you know, heebie-jeebies remarrying. You believe in it? That if it's chalila divorce, we can't believe in remarriage. You believe you have to go on and put the memories behind you and start rebuilding. This is a very practical religion. Tachlis. You know, purity, I can have another husband. Bonk. We believe in future tense. We believe in the sanctity of marriage. Don't, I don't think right of it, chalila. But if God takes something away from cancer or something like that, or chalila is an accident, we lose the divorce, and what can you do? We can't help it. You have to rebuild. I know people that live their whole life just to spite their ex-spouse or their spouse. So, I won't give again, I won't take again, I want this and that. Rude, why does he deserve? Why does she deserve? Idiot! You're cutting off your nose to spite your face. The marriage is dead, move on. And I tell you, simply, I took them in the Chumash. This one, you know, it's interesting. A man is permitted to marry a niece, but a man is not permitted to marry an aunt. You always think of these things as symmetrical. That's not always symmetrical in the Torah. Why this is way beyond my understanding? It's in a Chumash.
To sisters or brothers, son.
Child, yeah, it's even considered a good idea. Yeah. We don't like marriage with close relatives because we're afraid of the genetic problem.
First cousins.
People, I know many people that married first cousins married each other with no problem. I even spoke to a geneticist about it. Someone asked me a serious chat about it. I called a geneticist. The geneticist said, no specific disease known to the common family. She wouldn't even say anything about studying through my first cousin marriage.
simply I took them into the clubbers. This one, you know, it's interesting. A man is permitted to marry a niece, but a man is not permitted to marry an aunt. You always think of the niece as symmetrical. That's not always symmetrical in the Torah. Why it is this way is beyond my understanding. It's a din, a chumash.
So sisters or brothers,
Charles, yes, even considered a good idea. Yeah. We don't like marriage with close relatives because we're afraid of the genetic problem.
First cousins.
People, I know many people, they married first cousins, married each other with no problem. I even spoke to a geneticist about it.
So, sometimes
it's a marriage generation, but they lost on the problem. I spoke to a geneticist. Someone asked me a serious chat about it. I called the geneticist. The geneticist said, no specific disease known to the common family. She wouldn't even say that it was my first cousin there. Second cousin, sir. She had a wedding in the same neighborhood there, so 2 years ago, two second cousin there. Broke my chef. I'll be Charles. My family was second cousin married. You know, my wife's, you know, two generations up. That's the way it was in those days. Kept it in the family. But for us, it was a lot of marriage. That's why I'm always with kissing cousins, you know. Because the Gia, no problem with the Gia, it's only my cousin. Only my cousin? You can be married to that cousin. What kind of business is this? Only my sister, that's a different story. Because we know the Shesha of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and the people at the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash praise Hashem to eliminate the Yetzirah for illicit relationships. So Hashem said, fine. The problem was, he eliminated these Yetzirah for all relationships.
And they didn't want them.
Well, they didn't want them. They said they couldn't find a fresh egg in 3 days. Because even the laying of the egg was part of that system. The whole system. All systems shut down. Everything shut down, so the whole world, you know, nothing's going to happen. The rest of the world's going to come to the pot. There'll be no more world left. So the rabbi said, okay, you're punished, bro. This deal is off. Make another deal with you. Please restore the drive for legitimate relationships, but take it away for illegitimate relationships. Hey, come on. All right, come on. So I'll make a deal. We'll get rid of the incestual drive. Kind of a big drive. The Goyim are now reviving it. The revival. Revivalism. But the panel was probably the Torah to walk in marriage. There were the sisters and brothers and head of this. Tell you about it. So daughters, a terrible story. And you read about the abuse now. You read about it really goes on by the Goyim. What was that? And I'm sorry to say that Jews are not completely immune to these crazy things. But officially there's no Yetzirah. That's the official line. And by and large, it really isn't. I mean, by and large, they're the crazies. And therefore, some posts say that there is other restrictions don't apply. Like, for example, a mother and son, a father and daughter, there are no restrictions. You can hug her and you can kiss her and no problem. If brother and sister, the Rambam says, not a good idea, it should, we'll get to it later, not a good idea, it should be done, but it's not an absolute prohibition. Like, you know, not the same. You would say, well, the gear doesn't matter, she got a whole hand, that, you know. So we'll get to that later. For example, yichud. Being, you know, secluded, let's say, in the same apartment together. For mother and son, father, no problem. Indefinitely. But for brother and sister, there's a limit. Only for a month. Only for a month they can be in the apartment together. After that, they begin to see what's going on. All right. So that's what it says. This is how local advice. So, I know that. Very bad. Am I right?
I didn't hear
two people were orphans, they lost their parents, and they lived together their whole life. They never married, either never married. They're sick, never. Oh, that's not the case. I'm talking about the 60s. Don't do many cases. Midway, let's try this. One of us moved to a dorm or something like that. Get married, finished. I mean, quick. Find something to get married.
But they think that they're taking care of each other.
That's ridiculous. That's exactly ridiculous. Terrible. Anyway, so these illicit relationships are disastrous, and is one very interesting, although this is the most interesting of all. A man is not permitted to marry his wife's sister as long as his wife lives. If his wife dies, he's permitted to marry his wife's sister. In Europe, it was done as a matter of routine. Never, a woman would die young, never, because of a childbirth, or a disease. And it was almost expected that the wife's sister would marry,
take care of
her nieces and nephews, and hopefully have children of her own. There have even been cases in the rabbinic literature of a case in which a man never lost his young wife, and the wife had a sister. And the sister didn't want to marry this guy. She didn't like him. Well, my sister liked him, I don't like him. And the rabbis wanted that he should marry him, and we're going to take care of the kids. According to the tradition I've seen, they held up the burial of a black male. They held up the burial of the woman who died until the younger sister agreed to marry this guy.
Are they allowed to do that?
Unbelievable.
Are they allowed to do that?
I don't know. I read about it in one of the literature. We can't even, it would never happen in America. But they said it, this would have to be done. This is good for the children. This was the sister, dead sister would have wanted. And the sister should bring up her own children, blah, 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 blah. And you're duty bound to do it. This is before Hollywood and before you're picking your own. No marriage to arrange. So they wanted to arrange this one sort of to force it down the throat.
That was on the day of Leviathan.
After Leviathan. It was to postpone the burial until she said yes. Can you imagine that? Yes?
What about the husband's brother assuming that our children are
ready? The husband's brother, if a husband dies leaving children, she may not marry her husband's brother at all. That's an absolutely incestuous relationship.
But she must?
Right.
But she must marry her husband's brother? If there are no children?
That's what's called Yibum. Nowadays we don't do that anymore. Now we'll get to that maybe later.
When
did it stop? We are Ashkenazim stopped it years ago. Sfarim still do.
What, I'm sorry, when you say years ago, what?
How many years ago?
Okay. Is it in this century or not?
In this century, it was long before the century. There are more already said we don't believe it. We don't believe it. We only do Khalitz. You know Khalitz is, I think, of the shoe, what it is. That's a whole other story. We'll get to that. Another 150 simana. And then from now.
That's Boaz.
Boaz has to do that a little bit. That's correct. That's correct. The last topic for today is the prohibition against intermarriage. Everyone knows that intermarriage is prohibited. Everyone knows. But it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah. What does it say? Lo siskatein bom. Not intermarried. The big question, refers to all the seven nations who live near in the land of Israel, who is part of all nations, does it apply only if they're married, if they're not married? That's a very complicated business. Bottom line, a Jew may not live with a non-Jew. I don't want to go into the intricacies of why and how and what. That's the bottom line. Not allowed. It's not allowed. If you die with the government, it's the longest simon in the whole Shulchan Aruch. We're going to speak about it 2 minutes. Oops, 2 minutes over. We'll just get off with in a minute. The ultimate prohibited relationship is a married woman. We may not marry anybody else. Simon Yizayin is the longest simon in Shulchan Aruch, I believe, in terms of pages, sheer pages. In this big, big, big book, see how big the book is? It goes from page Lamed to page Nun Dalet. That's 25 double pages. That's about 50 pages on one simon. There was such problems with that goodness. They would disappear, and they presumed to be drowned, or lost in Africa, or business trips. Before the days of cellular phones, and faxes, and airplanes, they were just lost, terrible. And they always grabbed and tried to find ways to commit the wife to remarry. She should be an agula, should be a chained woman, an anchored woman. I don't mean the modern agula. The modern is a different thing. I was very much alive. It's alive and kicking. I'm going to let him give his wife a gift. I said, that's what's called the modern day agula. The old classical agula, which spans 52 pages, or whatever it is about the woman who's the man who disappeared. Did he drown? Didn't he drown? What witness? A non-Jewish witness.
War.
We have his tag, you know, that they carry the body, that could approve.
Did they not give each other
passport, the other what?
Did they not give gets when they went to war in case something like that would happen?
Some did. Very complex. I'm going to skip right over it. Because it doesn't really, it's not that relevant these days. And this is one of the most important areas of halacha. In the old days, it certainly was. But nowadays, it's something which rarely comes up. So I wanted to skip this whole thing, skip 50 feet. Now we're already halfway through the show. Now we're ready to see how fast, we cover ground. Just skip. So now with Mr. Shem, next week, when we regular time, we'll start some of the newscasts. I want to point out again that it's 2 weeks from now. Shem, now we're going to have one little bit. And it's one of the biggest word catch words in America today. Yeah, I'm not kidding. America, the ganze Welt is tumbling about this one little suit. It's based upon a one small little Gemara, which is understood in this way by most Rishonim. And otherwise, it's just starting to appear. So the turn, the Gemara, and the Bumps. So the Gemara is now. What is this thing we're talking about? What could this repeat the autonomy way of another one? What is it? This was called their lesbians. Yeah. They made it into the Shemara. They made it big. Awesome. Not allowed. Why not? What if it's nothing? It's garnished. Not like male homosexuality. It's an Isser Misa. It's described explicitly in the Chumash. Being an abomination. Kind of Misa. What's this? This female stuff is just nothing. So what is it? Well, it's be my say Eretz Mitzrayim. My say, apparently, it's an old story. They did it in Egypt. I'm not a historian, but apparently it's an Egyptian custom. The Torah explicitly tells them not to get it to follow the customs of the Egyptians. For this reason, it's prohibited. But it's interesting to note that although it is prohibited, it does not have any halakhic consequence. In other words, a woman who's involved in activities not prohibited to her husband. Gosh. Is it a tragedy? Yes. A man came to me. I shudder when I think about this conversation. It's held in strict confidence. Not tell anybody about it. And I can tell the story after saying your name. Comes to me and says, what do I do? For Pesach. Who the hell is Pesach Shire? All kinds of little Pesach Shire. It's this amazing story. This is a man who's unfortunate, his children aren't from. One of them, I think, was at one point even living with a guy. One point. So the question to say that. So you wouldn't let the guy come, let his daughter come, let you live with the Jews. That's a historian, not just starting from scratch. Well, showed me a letter that his daughter sent him, but now she's living with a woman. And he wants to know how the end of the day. This was Pesach, yeah? This was Pesach of America. What I do with my daughter and her girlfriend? Send me your life. So I told him, the same as before. But she's still about his daughter to come. What about a friend? Let's give you an idea of the challenge of North America, how low we've come. Shem Yirach. Now we'll get to a very much more serious matter. Simul Chapal. Remember that the halacha of Shimon was written to men, and the women is the flip side. Well, obviously, it's last love of going to women. Generally speaking, it's discussing men. Where it says that a man is supposed to stay far away from women. Ma'od, ma'od. What an expression. Where is him ma'od? Only twice in the Torah is ma'od, ma'od. Here, and this was ribs. And by Shokan, three places. Why? Men love women. That's, they have a little drive and a love for women. And men love money. So, you gotta say ma'od, ma'od. Stay away from it. Stay away from the women, stay away from the money. The ill-gotten money of either usury or bribes. Somebody asked me a shalom. They said, it's not a topic today at all. If a person judges the case and he receives a gift after the fact, take a gift before the fact is certainly not allowed. That's bribery. After it happened to be a shalom. And once I've been told, right, you're good with them. It's a story about invitation. Someone
wanted invitations and canceled and this and that. I think of my first time I met this guy, Ken. He's around for a long time, no? Invitations Plus. Could be my first encounter with him many years ago. Apparently somebody ordered him. I think it was him. Someone ordered invitations and then just he printed invitations and then the wedding was changed or postponed or canceled. And he said, I don't need a pen. I didn't confirm they have to print the invitations. I said, what do you mean? I printed the invitations. He gave me the order. I printed it. What are you talking about? You owe me all the money. In the hair and back of the wallet. How long ago was it? I mean, Abner Weiss was the rabbi in RJC. That's already has to be at least 11 years ago, 11, 12, at least. And I'm not sure if it was going to go than that. How do I remember that? Oh, I still remember. He calls us in, I mean, I was me, and you know, Nathan Cohen. Right? He was already watching the third guy. All of a sudden, I see Larry Hirschwitz floating around from Yonkers. What's he doing here? So my wife opens the proceedings and says, tells me about the story, because I'm such a close friend of the people involved, I hereby recuse myself. I recuse myself from the case, and now the three of you, and he walked out. Not just. Anyway, we passed and got a pen of money. Almost all of it. It's a little sharp. Good. The passed and he gave the money and finished. A month later, I get a book in the mail. Well, it was either being handled for this fellow, I think this was fellow Ken. It was a book about this meal or something. I already forgot what it was. It's a paper. This is the kosher. This is not kosher. I mean, it's true. It's long after the psak was given, and there's no expectation. It can't be right. But look at Shachanah, sure enough, in the Rosh, not so clear, but until we pass it. Shochad Meucha, it's called. Belated bribery. Not allowed. Somebody asked me this question this morning. Belated? Sure, I returned it. Is belated bribery allowed? I said, no. I said, why do you ask? This is not a bad news. I said, that guy is loving the guy. I'm sure. A kid or something. You didn't see the papers? Yeah, I said, he's a judge. What papers? There was a big party yesterday. You want to know what the papers are? Are you ready with any of this one? O.J. Simpson threw a party for his jurors. Fancy hotel somewhere, a fancy restaurant, I don't know how to catch the name. Probably somewhere in LA. He was kibitzing a shochad, just remind me that I can't resist. So you gotta stay far away from shochad and from ribbis and from women. And what it says, even certain hand signals, what's that? Foot signals, eye signals are prohibited. Because they can lead to other things. A man is not permitted to be lightheaded towards a woman. So that was exactly. I'll tell you one thing. There was once an ad somewhere in the Rabbi Yeshiva that wanted a co-ed volleyball activity. I don't know exactly what happened. It didn't happen. Co-ed volleyball team up for boys and still fight boys against girls. One Rebbe got up and said to Yeshiva then, this is a hore ba'aliyah. You have to die rather than play co-ed volleyball. Okay, so this, I can understand where it's coming from. He said this is a lightheaded activity, and with women, just it's not right. All right? Similarly, hold a hot bit for your fear. Ooh, you're not permitted to look at the beauty of a woman. So the Shulchan Aruch, you're not permitted to look at the beauty of a woman. What it says? Explicitly. And the Shmuel calls it Asim and Torah. And it says, it's Lo Sasu Achrei Nechem. Don't stray following your eyes. You're not permitted to look at the beauty of a woman because you may be, I don't know how to say it nicely, you may see her, you may desire her, you may covet her, and you may actually sit with her as a result of your wanton glazed gaze. Any man, any woman, when I get married, patient. Not my own wife, I have to show him. Believe me. Talk about a woman other than his wife. Okay? That's the reason given. The law says, and it's also in our Torah. Okay, let's to smell a perfume. And it's prohibited to stare at women, the stack of the nushing, when they're doing the wash. This is not mean when they're using a washing machine. In the olden days, they did the wash by the river. They picked up their skirts, dresses, whatever they were wearing, not to get wet, ruined. And apparently with exposed parts of the body which were otherwise covered, they're not permitted to go past the place where the women were doing their wash. I mean, if you cannot finish the past by doing the wash, what would the rabbis think about someone who goes to the, what? What? They're swimming, right. Believe what they were doing when they left, picked up their jerk scratch, skirt, little blue wash. It's not compared to the bikinis of Coney Island. All right, or what's Coney Island? Well, Riverdale swimming pools all over the place. Obviously, it's prohibited for a man to be there. If a man walks in his market and he has a woman in front of him, he's not permitted to walk behind him. He should run and run to the side, pass him. Not in the car, those in the car. but when you're walking, he should sort of pass her on the side. So they should go by 42nd Street for the test. Pass out Isha Zoma. I feel the rock, they shouldn't walk and he shouldn't go near there. Then it says, that a man who stares at a woman, even at her small little pinky, that's batana, with the intention to have pleasure, to scamp on the halusimena, is a terrible violation. Pinky? Yeah, I guess. I'm not sure what to do about a pinky, but I guess if that's what he enjoys, teach his own. If he's not permitted to hear her voice, he's not permitted to see her hair, and if he has kavana of any of these things to enjoy it, he is punishable with makas maris, and it is a serious offense. Question: how do you get married? How do you get married? Says Shemarav two sifim later, mutu listaka v'tnui olavotka yomi yope sheisa eno. Permissible for a man to stare at a woman who's single. Check her out. If she's pretty, so you should marry her. Nothing wrong with her pretty. We discussed it in the beginning. That should be the only criteria. But it has to be pleasing. She has to look right for him. She doesn't look right for him. She shouldn't be marrying her. Not only that, below the royal asking. It's advisable, it's proper to stare, not just to look like they lose them for a split second. No. When it says listaka means to stare, to look very carefully. But it says, it's the right thing to do. But lo yistakel b'derech zdus, as for sure, should look at her in an immoral way. He's permitted to look at her to see if he enjoys how she looks. But if he doesn't enjoy how she looks, he shouldn't be marrying her. That's what it says. Because once he's married to her, once again, he's permitted to stare at his wife, even if she's nida. Even though he enjoys it, because he's so pretty, we're not afraid he's going to sin because it's the way to be a little patient. You should go to the mikvah. But he shouldn't joke or be overly involved with what we call kalos rosh. There's no other way to draw certain limits. It's all Shulchan Aruch and Siman Chafa. Now, the question is, how is it permissible for a man to look at the woman in order to marry her? Do I need chazet to marry a woman? So let's say, listen. You want a shidduch? Fine. Eat chazet, I'll get you a shidduch. What do you say? No way. So if staring at a woman is not allowed, so then it's like eating chazet. So how is it possible that it's permissive? What's going on over here? That's fine. So here we have to discuss something very basic. The Gemara seems to have two separate and distinct psukim explaining why it's prohibited for a man to stare at a woman. One we just mentioned before. Velo sasu acharei einecha. Don't stray after your eyes. Because the person who watches his eyes, follows his eyes, can end up in a disaster. comes out there, for example, Shimshon Ha'arelam. So Delilah was so pretty, it cost him very dearly, it cost him his life. Alright, so you have to be very careful. Be so careful. That's Los Asur Ha'arelam. There's a completely separate and distinct prohibition, which is quoted by the Smak, one of the Gedolei Rishonim. It's a different pasuk. A different pasuk completely. Nothing to do with Los Asur Ha'arelam. It's a different pasuk from a different Gemara. This Gemara Los Asur was the Pesach of Ramos. The Gemara that's quoted here is in two places. It's in either the Subas or Avodah Zarah. There it says, a man not permitted to stare at a woman, especially if she's pretty. And it's a different pasuk spoken. The pasuk says in the same Gemara, V'nishmarta mikol dovar ra. That means you should be careful of anything bad. What a generality. Be careful of anything bad. Great. Be careful of anything bad. Watch out for bad things. What does that mean, bad things? So the Gemara says in the Sefer Tzumas and Avodah Zarah that a person is not supposed to stare at pretty women, shouldn't even be thinking about women, not what he should be thinking about. And one of the reasons is because it will cause him to be coming. That's the context of the pasuk in talking about the encampment of the Jews when they go to war. The Israelite encampment in the desert and they go to war. So it says, the Shmak to be called over. Oh. And then it says, a person is what's called Tame Mikre Loyola. Mikre Loyola means that at night, he will have what they call now a nocturnal emission. That's exactly what it's a mikre lila, which renders him ritually impure. He can't be in the encampment of Klal Yisrael. He has to go out certain parts of the encampment. So the Gemara records the basic fact, which has been confirmed by all the various scientific journals and lurid journals and all kinds of flicks and paperbacks that are around all over the place, and they're ill, that there's a cause and effect relationship. You know, what a person's thinking about or looking at a day, and what he does at night, whether it's willingly or even without realization, without purposely kind of involvement. And therefore, it's prohibited. So, we have a problem, a contradiction in Tzuk. One says Los Asur Ha'arelam, and one says V'nishmarta. So the Smak in the following answer, he wrote this, I would say, now 600 years ago. And lo and behold, Rav Moshe Feinstein on his own said exactly the same answer. Oh, he had the Smak. He just said it on his own. It is true, secret emotion. That there are two different kinds of staring. We'll see, they're one or two. We'll start with two. The worst is staring for the purpose of immorality. Yeah. Staring for the purpose of immorality. That's true. I hate to say it. Someone told me a story, you know, what are we yeshiva boys know about this? Going from anecdotal story about a bunch of fellas who were far, far never from Yiddishkeit at one point. Now they became Balachuv. At least one of them became Balachuv. So this Balachuv is telling this Rav, who told me the story afterwards, about what his experience was when they came to a base Hazonos. They came to a house of ill repute, that's what it's called today. So four guys came to this house of ill repute, and I can't even say it, what the story happened. And there were four, apparently, they knew where they go, there were four women. But the problem was, everyone was starting you up, and they all wanted the same one. So why do they all want the same one? Because every one of them was by violation of Los Asur Ha'arelam. They all wanted this one. I guess she was the prettiest. I don't know. I can't understand these pretty crazy people. But that was an absolute violation of Los Asur Ha'arelam. They were staring, you know, up and down to see who's the one of their choice. I mean, not much favors did it, in a somewhat more governmentally approved way. So what? It was the same idea. You read about it with the Gila, then we have something which we never heard of. Huh? That's a violation of Los Asur Ha'arelam. So it's looking for the purpose, with the intention, with the expectation of Sedus and the morality. That's the worst. That's Los Asur Ha'arelam. But what if a man has absolutely no intention of entering into any of our chasms? Oh, look, he's a person who is a perfectly moral and ethical and is in control, he's not going to do anything wrong, Khalil of the chas. He just likes to look pretty well. I'm not going to do anything. He's just watching everything go by the street. He's not going to follow it. When I was a kid, there used to be something they'd say, standing on the corner watching all the girls go by. There was a nigga like that in the 50s in America. Okay? That was considered the pastime, not in baseball, but the pastimes of America in the 1950s. You know, the innocent age of Ozzy and Harry. It wasn't so innocent as you might think. So what's wrong with that? He's not going to do anything. He has whatever, he has fantasies, he may have this, he has a thrill, or whatever. It's not supposed to be rough, that's not supposed to be rough right now. But it's a Torah violation of Vidishmartha Mikol Dalara. It's also a Torah prohibition. There are two differences in Rabbi Moshe writes between these two prohibitions. One of them is, does it apply to a woman? The first one does, and the second one doesn't. The first one does. The woman is looking at men. This guy, with the intention of running after them, or seducing them, I don't know how she manages to do whatever she does. That is a violation of Los Asur Achrei Nehem. It is gender blind. It applies to both men and women. However, the second prohibition of just looking how men look, right, and they, without any, they want to fantasize and think and that, but they don't tend to do anything about it, this would not be a violation of the Shema that doesn't apply physically to women at all. So Rabbi Moshe writes, not going to believe this, because it's in the 50s, that there's certain movies that are also for men and women. I guess I'm just x-ray stuff. And there's certain other movies which are also for men and women for women. And just about said it, almost in those words. Why? Because they show pictures that a man shouldn't be looking at. But romance. So the 50s. I would say that it's not as there for a man to go to the movies. It probably is almost, I don't know how much I'm saying, I'm not really expert. Disney. No, I didn't have fun. These were the Disney, the experts. Yeah, they were experts in The Lion King and the Aladdin. I could do it inside out, back on the course, and go out again and again and again. So they knew it, they could have played the whole script about pay after a while. So in some circles, it's expected. You don't like movies at all. Pretty bad, you know, beauty's not to the beholder. But she's pleasing to his eye. So therefore, it seems to me that it's necessary for him to do this, and that in case it will lead to this undesirable result, no, it's not called Livatola, but it's doing it for a purpose. The purpose is getting married. Not just for his fantasies, for his thrills. He's doing it for a purpose. That's one of the reasons why I tell all my committed, and I say it many times, that men should not be involved in with women until they're ready to get married. Like 13, 15, 17. What kind of business is this? Even in this late 60s, early 70s, we're still thinking that